Last week, we began with a review of chapter 4, and then we studied first part of chapter 5. So let's go, we're going to go back, I think, today and read chapter 5, verse 1 through 5, through 7. Just as a quick review, and then walk prudently when you go to the house of God. Draw nearer to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they don't know that they do evil. Don't be rash with your mouth. Let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God's in heaven and you are on earth, therefore let your words be few. For a dream comes through much activity and a fool's voice is known by his many works. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it. He has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. It's better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. I should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the work of your hands. For in the multitude of dreams and many words, there also is vanity. But fear God. What are these first 7 verses in the 5th chapter tell you? Anybody?
God listens to what we say. So don't say something unless you mean it.
What about making promises to God, making promises to others, making a vow? What's God say about that? Yes.
I also think that when he says foolish vows, that he may be talking about something that was going on during that time period, and that was that they would make a vow by the gold of the altar or by the something other than a vow to God, and those are just absolutely foolish, and a foolish vow is not something that's also not thought out. So God wants you to be a better listener and a less talker.
Also, well, I think last week we brought out a story back in Judges about the man who wanted to lead his Israelites to battle, and he made a vow. He says, I'm going to sacrifice the first thing that comes through my home door. Who came through the home door? Anybody?
His daughter.
His daughter came through the home door. Yeah. Would you call that a foolish vow? No. That's really beyond dumb, man. But it cost him probably the rest of his life in mourning. Had to have to bear the rest of his life, but it cost your daughter's life as well. Because it was foolish vow. It was serious stuff back in those days. What about today? Serious stuff today? And we don't do anything that foolish. I mean, you know, we're going to cause grief like that. At least I hope not. But those are things that we need are just as effective, just as meaningful today as they were back in the days of the judges when this unfortunate circumstance happened. What should be our attitude towards God? In these seven verses, what should be our attitude towards God? It applies to us today, doesn't it? Approach the wise person, we approach the house of God to listen. Let your words be few and listen. Isn't that what we are doing today? Approaching the house of God, and we're here to study His Word, aren't we? And to listen. What about being impulsive and hasty in our thoughts?
Well, that's part of your words being few, is to think about what you're going to say before you say it.
Take some time to think about what you're going to say. Try to make those words as few as possible. What about this vowing? Should we make foolish vows or make vows and then not keep them? What do these seven verses say?
Well, it seems to be okay in our present society. In fact, people glory in that. But we are to be separate from our world, and that's part of us being separate from the world by thinking about what we say, not making foolish vows, showing respect and reverence for our God.
I did the same thing, but remember when your kids, let me borrow the car. Please, I promise to be back at 10 o'clock. You get these promises, like, you know, just meaningless promises, but it's a vow, and it's superficial. But when you're talking and making a vow towards God, that's serious business, isn't it? I think the ultimate thing in this part of Ecclesiastes is fear God. That's part of the last part of verse 7. Carol?
I think there's a difference between a Christian being told to let your yes be yes and your no be no, as, well, I promise I'll be home. That's a promise you made to your dad. It's an earthly promise. But a vow that you made to God is unbreakable. And so when the Jews kept breaking their vow to God, He would withdraw from their presence. And the same thing is true when you break a vow to God. Now He will withdraw from your presence.
Yeah, serious business. While you're over there in Ecclesiastes, let's go to start out in verse 5:8, chapter 5, verse 8. And we'll go to 6:12. And that will really be our subject of our lesson today. And this is really quite reading here. If you see the oppression of the poor, the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, don't marvel at the matter. For high officials watches over high officials, and even higher officials watch over them. Moreover, the prophet of the land is all himself is served from the field. He who loves silver, not be satisfied with silver. He nor he who loves abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, who eateth? So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats a little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. There's a severe evil which I have seen under the sun. Riches kept for their owner to his hurt, but those riches perish through misfortune. When he begets a son, there's nothing left for that son. As he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return to those who came, and he shall take nothing from the labor which he may carry away in his hand. This also is a severe evil, that just exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind? All his days he also eats in darkness, and he has much sorrow and sickness and anger. Here's what I have seen. It's good and fitting the one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor, in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life which God gives him, for it is his heritage. As for every man in whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this also is the gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. There is an evil which I've seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity, and it is an evil affliction. If a man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with goods, or indeed he has no burial, I say that stillborn child is better than he, for it comes in vanity and departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness. Though it has not seen the sun or known anything, it has more rest than that man. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice over, has not seen goodness. Do not all go to one place. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and that the soul is not satisfied. But what more has the wise man than the fool? What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eye than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity, grasping for the wind. Whatever one is, he has been named already, for it's known that he is a man, and he cannot contend with him who is mightier than he. Since there are many things that increase vanity, how is man the better? Who knows what is good for man in life? All the days of his vain life which he passes out of his shadow. And tell a man what will happen after him under the sun. Give two reasons why a person who wants wealth never has enough. What could some of those reasons be? Anybody?
Could be lust for one.
I'm sorry?
Could be lust for one.
Okay, lust, yeah.
Greed.
Do you have examples of that today? I remember being at Albertson that one evening, and there was a lady over there, and she bought some lottery tickets, and I think the grand prize was like $1.3 billion. And she bought a bonus ticket, which doubled that if she won. And I looked at the gal behind the register, and she just raised her eyebrows. She went like that. $1.3 million wasn't enough. She had to buy a bonus ticket to double that if she won. And I think the odds were something like 1 in 60 million or something like that. That's pretty tough. When you run into something like that. Let's look at this. Why is the desire for wealth harmful to a person's health? We just read something about that. Yes, Carol. Well,
there's always more to get, so you're never satisfied. You never are. The happiness is a temporary thing because there's always something out there that piques you your need, and so you're not happy with what you have.
Well, yeah, one of the verses that we read says that the sleep, so the organ gets up, goes to work, comes home, eats, goes to sleep, sleeps well. And the rich man goes to bed and doesn't sleep well because his mind is consumed by how do I continue to make money. Maybe he's a good rich man and his mind is consumed by how do I keep this business running so I take care of my employees. But there's a burden. There's a burden that comes with large amounts of wealth. Maybe it's just that you can't trust the people around you. You think they're always trying to take it. You know, my wife loves me for me because I don't have anything. I don't know what she stands to gain, but if you're a wealthy person, you can't trust that those people that are in your life love you. There's just so many themes that go with it that it doesn't allow that person. And we say man, it doesn't matter if it's man or woman, but it doesn't allow that person peace and rest. There's always more to achieve.
Yeah, you have sleepless nights. Can't rest because you're always worried about your wealth. It makes you sick because you don't get restful sleep. Causes you to make hasty and rash investment decisions, and money can flow through your hands very quickly. I don't know, I don't think they teach a whole lot about American history anymore. But who remembers in the study what happened in 1929? And it's before my time. Even before me. But what happened in 1929? You remember?
Market crash.
And all these people that had these fabulous fortunes all of a sudden were broke. They made bad investments, bad decisions. And what? A lot of them jumped down the window, committed suicide, blew their head off, committed suicide because they just couldn't stand the idea of losing all that wealth. And that's where their love was. And all of a sudden it was gone. And they lost everything. They just couldn't handle it. Working man doesn't have that problem usually. Don't have anything to lose like Dean said. You work for a living and you're comfortable with it. And the Lord tells you to be happy. What's the attitude a person should have about their current wealth, either poor or rich?
be grateful.
Yeah, certainly true. Be grateful. Sure.
You can't control it. After you're dead, it's somebody else's. So
can't take it with you.
Paul said, "Be satisfied in whatever circumstances you're in."
Well,
it's a gift from God, and you should use it accordingly.
Yes, Scripture tells us that God gives wealth to some, and some He keeps it from. So it's just a chance in someone's front. You remember Paul in the book of Philippians? I always look at the book of Philippians as the joy book. Very short, 4 chapters. But it's Paul writing from his prison in Rome. And he's writing to these Philippians. And they were one of the few congregations that supported him during all of his trials and tribulations and journeys. And so they held a special part of Paul's heart because of their goodness and their willingness to support. But Paul writes to them down in chapter 4. And he says, "I've had wealth, I've had abundance, but I've also been poor and wanting." Paul says, "I've learned to be content in both of those. I've learned to be content when I've had abundance. I've learned also to be content when I have need." So Paul really set an example for us today, didn't he? When you go through life, and you think there's anything wrong with being wealthy?
No.
Having an abundance of money or wealth? What about the things?
Well, you can look at the early church. There were people that were a part of the early church that had lands and houses. Some of them sold what they had. They had this this attitude about what they owned, that it was to be used for the glory of God. And so you had a man like Barnabas who had land, sold it, and gave them the proceeds, to the church so that they could care for the needs that they had. You had people who had nothing, but who gave themselves to the Lord. And that's what the Apostle Paul says. He praises some churches. They had nothing. In great trial of their affliction, they gave themselves to the Lord. And they were more effective in spreading the gospel than people who had a lot and wouldn't part with it. So the problem is not the wealth. The problem is the way we think about it. The wealth. It's the love of money that's the root of all evil. It's not money.
He mentioned Barnabas. And Matthew 4, I think that's where that's at. Can we name a few more who were wealthy individuals who gave their names freely?
Lydia.
And yet remain righteous people, not counted as righteous.
Lydia, the seller of purple.
Lydia, yeah. Mark?
So kind of a little different take on this. I know that there's a lot of emphasis that Solomon is talking about in terms of people who are wealthy. And I would conclude that verses 18 and 19 of chapter 5 talk about two different people. And I would say that verse 18 seems to focus on people who are not wealthy, and verse 19 focuses on people who are wealthy. Some of that, I think, answers the question that Dean posed last week, and that is why are there, you know, bad people who make a lot of money and good people who don't make a lot of money? I think kind of the point, too, is we see and read that, you know, Solomon says, I've seen everything. I've done everything. I've experienced everything under the sun. But the difference was is that he did it with a wise heart. I would make the argument that as much attention has been paid to people who are wealthy and what can happen to them and the hurt and the stress and the despair, because they're always focused on money. What is that like for somebody who, on the converse side, they are always worried about paying the bills, having enough food, you know, not being able to take care of their family? That same stress is there. And so I think verse 18 and 19 really speak to what Dean just said, and that is your attitude. You know, whether you were, quote unquote, lucky enough to, your portion is to be wealthy, or if your portion is to not be wealthy, what is your main focus? If your main focus is on those earthly things, whether riches or just trying to make ends meet, then you're not going to be able to think about God. It reminds me of when I went to Israel, and I wondered why do you like the Hasidic Jews and the really devout Jews, why do they always wear the black outfits and the white shirts? And the reason for that is because it's the absence of color. They don't have to think about anything in terms of their wardrobe because it's always the same. It's kind of like school uniforms. That's it. And then when you get down to verse 20, when he says, for he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. To me, that's the wisdom. That's what Solomon was talking about in his wisdom. Whether I'm rich or poor, it doesn't matter. If my focus is on what God wants me to focus on, and that's him, then it literally doesn't matter where I'm.
How can it be harmful if you have wealth?
If you put your trust in it.
Just touched on several reasons for that, Margaret.
Well, you're entitled to whatever you work for. But with what you get, you have a responsibility. And whether that is, whether you don't have very much money or you have a lot of money, you still have the responsibility to manage it the way God would want you to. And to me, it almost seems in the world to have so much money that you don't even know what to do with it. When there is so much in the world, so many people who are wanting.
Yeah, you know, if you have wealth, then there's some responsibilities that come with that. That is, to spend your money wisely in helping others, you have employees, treat them fairly. You know, you have other obligations in there that's thrown in there as well. Carol?
Well, when as I think Margaret sort of said, when people make money, they become sure of the fact that they're relying on themselves. They rely on themselves instead of relying on God. And you need to have God be in the throne of your heart, not yourself. You need to be humble. And
we have examples of people who were wealthy in the Bible, and yet they remained, their true focus was on God. I think my favorite, of course, a lot of people that we, I went through it. We finally picked up a few that were in the New Testament, but I think one of my favorite one, probably of all time, is probably Job. Because this man was wealthy beyond belief. He had an incredible wealth. And he lost it all. Lost everything. But did he blame God for his losses? He remained true to God, didn't he? In spite of all the misery and sorrow that was created. And he just stayed steadfast. And that's probably my favorite person of all time.
Ron, you asked the question, you know, how can it be harmful? I think it would depend upon our definition of what harmful is. So how would you describe harmful in that question? What do you mean by harmful? What's your definition?
Okay. How can it be harmful? What if you use? It's like Timothy, 1 Timothy, talks about desire to get rich. And it says the love of money is the root of all evil. So if you focus your being on your wealth, and that's your primary, remember Matthew 6, 24, which says you can't serve two masters. You either love the one and you hate the other. Okay? Or you hate the one and love the other. So you can't love your wealth. I think some scriptures call it mammon, but riches and God at the same time. But you can love God and hate the riches, or you know, use them wisely. David, did you have a question?
Well, you know, you mentioned wealth, but I think wealth's relevant. You know, as well, having 6 months of your expenses in the bank, or as well, you know, owning lots of land, or as well, having millions of dollars in the bank. I mean, everybody can perceive wealth differently. I think Mark made a good point. It seems to be more of a state of mind, because the person that has a lot of debt may also not sleep at night wondering how am I going to pay the bills, you know. But there's a lot of different things that define wealth. You know,
that's true.
Different family.
I think the most destructive thing or harmful thing that wealth can do to you is start making you feel self-sufficient, that you don't need God, that you can take care of yourself.
Anybody else have a comment? Question? Remember the story about the rich man who he had abundance of wealth. And he had so much he didn't know what to do with it. And I said, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll tear down the apartments I've got and I'll build bigger ones. So I could store all my wealth. That's for his love. What happened to this guy? But the Lord said, you fool, this life is going to be required of you. So what happened to him? Lost everything, didn't he? Couldn't get it. Linda?
Well, I believe his relative. I know of a young man that his wealth, he lost. His wealth was with his mother. And as the years went by, he covered himself with tattoos all over his entire body. And he was very proud of it, and he felt secure with it, and he bragged on it. Asked him why he did that. He said, "No one can take these away from me."
Good.
So, blessed are the poor in spirit, and they will see heaven.
Well, I think the Apostle Paul summed it up, didn't he? We're running out of time here, but we referred to it earlier in Philippians, the fourth chapter, about Paul saying that he had learned to be content in any situation. And that was that when he had an abundance, he was certainly happy there, but he had to walk. He was content as far as that went as well. Go ahead, Dean.
Well, I think we do have to understand.
Go ahead, Dean.
Oh, wrong Dean. Let that one go.
Not you, not two.
No, let's be number one. He's got one.
Go ahead, Dean.
Well, I think Mark makes a really good point.
Yes.
It can be harmful to be wealthy. And there are even diseases that are associated with being wealthy. One of them was gout. And that was a disease that basically only affected those people who were very wealthy and ate this incredibly bad diet. There are also diseases that affect us when we're poor. And we drink water that's contaminated because we can't afford to dig a well. So it's not that. I look at Ephesians 4 in verse 28. And I used to joke and say, let him that stole steal no more, working with his hands a thing that is good. That's not what it says. Let him that stole steal no more. But rather let him labor, working with his hands, that he may have to give to him that lacks. That's the key as I see it. Wealth is a tool. Sometimes we make it an end, but it in reality is a tool that we can use. And if we use it well, then it has value. If we think we can insulate ourselves from the ups and downs of life, good people suffer, wicked people prosper, wealth won't do it. If you try to do it with wealth, escape that or insulate yourself from it, then wealth becomes meaningless.
We can look around us today and we can see how wealth creates corruption. We see it today, don't we? All the time. But if we're blessed with wealth, then our job is to use it wisely, but always put it in a proper perspective. And that is fear God and keep His commandments. That's the whole duty.